Hello, this is Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to a very special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle, where I am joined by former auditor, current auditor. I'll kick it to you to do the introductions, John.
Yeah, John Dougal, good to be with you. Shireen, always fun to do this. We have with us auditor Tina Cannon. So she's the state auditor for the state of Utah, first female state auditor.
Yes, that's true.
Tina, tell us about yourself.
So I'm actually the first independently elected Republican woman in Utah. So I'm the first one to hold a statewide office that didn't share a ticket with someone else, and the first woman state auditor for Utah. So I am proud of that. I didn't run because I knew that. John and I talked about
Republican
it.
Woman. Because
yes.
Jan Graham
is the only other woman to do that.
Yeah.
Only took the Republican Party about 36 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for doing that. That's wonderful. And I think people forget Olean Walker came into the role after resignation, do we say?
She was on a ticket.
She was on a ticket.
So as lieutenant governor, you're on a ticket with the governor. And then she came into governor when Mike Leavitt stepped down. To go back and work in D.C.
So where'd you grow up?
So I actually grew up in Box Elder County. I'm from Brigham City originally, but I've been in Morgan County now for 26 years. I've been elected 3 times, but I don't have anyone buried in the cemetery there, so they don't count me yet because it is rural Utah and you have to earn your stripes in rural Utah. So Box Elder County still claims me most of the time. So.
And what did your family do there?
My dad was a seminary teacher. My mom was a teacher. Yeah. So both in education. I'm one of 9. So I had a lot of siblings growing up. So I'm used to fighting for attention.
You had a small family.
Yes, a very small family.
Shireen is an only child.
I'm an only child.
And she's with Natalie and I, who are both 11 kids. 11. Natalie's the youngest. I'm the oldest. And our producer, Anthony, also comes from a family of 11.
Yes. I'm sorry you've never had to fight for food around the table. Make sure there were never seconds.
Yeah, that's what I told her. You take it the first time because it's never coming back.
And you eat fast.
Was your family political or was this something you came to?
My mother was. My mother was always very political. Caucus night was always at our house. She was always in the Republican women, so very political. I learned politics around the campfire with my mother's family.
Yeah.
Very political.
So the thing that we have in common is we both served in county government. I forget, is yours a commission or a council?
It was a council. That actually behaved like a commission, so we didn't know what we were, but now it's a commission. They made it official.
So tell me a little bit about your path to running for office for the first time.
So I was the Republican Party chair, and the rule is if you can't get someone to run for office, you have to do it. So that's how that ended up. And
of course, you didn't learn that until
I'm like in the position. And then, in fact, I think I was sitting next to John. We were having a conversation about the auditor's office, and I walked up to speak at the microphone about running for office, and he looked at me like, "What? You're doing what?" So, because he was at our county convention, and so I was elected to the county council, and that's how I actually got to know John really, really well. Morgan County had a major embezzlement, 100% of the general fund. They got it in 15 months, and so I really got, after I was elected later and came on as an accountant and was looking at the controls that hadn't been put in place and the things that needed to happen to fix that control environment, it became a little harder than it probably should have been. We worked really closely with the state auditor's office, got myself into a lot of hot waters with my fellow council members trying to fix a problem. And so that was really how I got to know the state auditor's office and what they did as well. Yeah. So,
well, this is a big deal for Morgan County. I want to come back to this in a second because when I had the honor of serving Salt Lake County, such little of Salt Lake County is unincorporated, but a lot of Morgan County is unincorporated. So when I think about the kind of challenges that Morgan County faced or it continues to face, it's interesting because there's a lot of overlap in terms of housing is exploding up there. I'm sure there are some challenges around economic development, investment in that. Tell me some of the big things that you see happening in Morgan County and maybe a few things that you were really proud of related to your service.
Well, economic development is really difficult on the Wasatch Back. We just don't have the infrastructure. So we went through COVID. My final year was COVID. And actually having internet service to all of the school children in Morgan, where we did not even have a main internet line through the county. And that became a huge project for us that last year as we tried to get service to all of the school kids who were no longer in school. And you, in order to have online classes, you actually have to be online. So that was
details,
one of the biggest, it was, that was a Herculean effort to try to bring internet to all of the county that year. It, and these are, we're 5 minutes, well, I shouldn't tell people that because it is the smallest, shortest drive up a canyon in Utah. But the secret's out. We've had an explosion of population up there. But just that far off the Wasatch Front, the problems become very different. In rural Utah, you just don't have the budget for staff. So if you're a council member, you are the economic development director. You are on all of the committees. So you're doing a lot of the work that staff usually does in the larger counties. So you get to know all of the details and how every program works.
And for some that are listening that might not know where Morgan County is, it's just right off Ogden.
The snow basin.
Yeah. So, John, we know a little bit about your flavor of Republicanism, libertarian corner.
Very small.
Yes, and I think people have come to realize that I'm basically a Democratic Socialist. But what is it? Can you talk about what colors your commitment to the Republican Party, or what is it that you feel are some of the core values you bring to your role and to your thinking as a Republican?
So that's a good question lately, because I spent a lot of time thinking about exactly how did I get, am I in the right place? But my career was that of a tax accountant. My specialty is taxation. So I spent a lot of time sitting across the desk telling people how much money they send to the government. I know who we take it from. I know what it could be doing if we didn't take it from them. So I've always been a small government, only the things that government should be doing, because I know where that money is coming from. And especially here in Utah, where Utah taxes income, sales, and property, by far, the majority of your tax bill is coming from state and local governments here in Utah. So that's my passion. That's why I got involved, knowing what tax policy is, how it's implemented, and how it impacts the individual is really what got me involved. That, and my mother always told us we couldn't complain unless we were willing to get involved. So I have earned my right to complain. I am very involved.
As you look at, if you will, going back, Republican Party, Democrat Party, you kind of alluded to the shifting of what's taking place in the parties. What do you see right now? What are you grateful for, and what are you concerned with?
Well, I feel like you should have to answer a little bit of that first. Yeah.
I usually talk about that in the other shows.
So that's where the values of the Republican Party have shifted away from what used to be small government and local control. I see that a lot here in Utah, especially with the legislature and land use questions, that having come out of local government and knowing what we do and how hard we try to get it right on planning and zoning decisions, it's really difficult for me to watch kind of that removal of those decisions from the very communities that they serve. So that whole local control, small government, letting the problems be fixed, the closer the people are to the problem, that level of government should be fixing the problem. We seem to have shifted away from that, and that bothers me.
Yeah. It's interesting because that bothers me, too. I felt that at the county council, at Salt Lake County. It really did feel like they, at the legislature, and I will say the supermajority Republicans often said local control, local control. But really that they said that until the locals wanted control.
Right.
And it was really frustrating, especially on those issues of land use, of housing, of how we're going to build and shape the feel of our counties.
You don't have the Dakota ring. Local control means my control.
As long as you agree with me.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. And so John and I had worked a lot in the state auditor's office with public infrastructure districts, which is just one more way to take those local control decisions and add another tax line. So that trend is just going the wrong direction in my mind. But we keep saying we want local control, but your actions speak so much louder than those words.
So tell me how you ended up as our auditor.
So when I sold my company...
I don't know this part of the story.
So John, when I sold my company, I'd been a tax accountant for a long time. I sold it when I ran for Congress the second time. And
a second time?
Yes.
Do we need to talk life choices right
here? Yes, exactly. You know, the first time was COVID, so you thought it was... So you had to do it again to experience what it should have been like. But
just so our listeners know, all three of us have run for Congress.
We've all
at least once.
We've all made that mistake.
I'll learn the lesson.
Blessings and great gratitude for people who decide to do that. But it's a grind.
It's hard. Yeah. It's very, very hard in a short amount of time. So after I'd sold the company and then I had not obviously been successful in my run for Congress, I was looking at, oh, I'm retired. So what am I going to do with my time? So I just was looking for something to fill the time. And John reached out. His secretary had found out that I was looking for work. And John reached out and said,
you applied in the office. And I'm like,
did.
Wait a second, this is the wrong job for her to apply for.
Exactly. So John called me and said, what about this? And so we had a conversation and I accepted. John is very persuasive when he decides. So John offered me a job and I accepted it. And then I had to go tell my husband. He's like, wait a minute, you had that really great offer. And I should not say where, but he's like, wait a minute. And I'm like, but John said I could make a difference doing this. So my husband, it was an interesting conversation because it was not what I had planned at all. I was getting out of government. I felt like I'd been through the ringer, time to do something maybe less stressful. So I went from the frying pan into the fire in this position. So
she had applied.
But it's John's fault.
She applied to be a privacy person in
privacy.
The office.
Yeah.
And I was looking for a policy advisor to do special projects when it comes to audits.
Wonderful.
And the funny thing is, I hired her, and one of the first things she said is, I never want to run for elected office again.
Well, here we are.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd really love to get into helping our listeners understand a little bit more about the form and function of the auditor's office and some of the things that you're working on.
All right.
This is Shireen Gourbani, and I am here with Auditor Tina Cannon, our former auditor, John Dougal, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you'd like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This is Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to a special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle, where we're taking a deep dive into the auditor's office, and we have lots of expertise at the table.
So John Dougal here with you, Shireen, and Auditor Cannon. Tell us, what is it the auditor does?
So we have oversight over every dollar of tax money that goes through the state of Utah. So that's federal money that comes in, the state funding, state taxes, also local government, the universities. So just it's about $100 billion in spending and assets across the state of Utah that we have ultimate oversight over. So we do a lot of those audits at the state level and the federal level, but we contract out for the local government and we collect all of their information. So we do financial audit mainly and primarily. And then we also have Transparent Utah. It came under the control of the state auditor under John. That has been a growing responsibility as we report on where all of that tax money goes.
Now, tell me a little bit more. I don't know if you want to start, John, maybe, but like, how did this come to be and how do people engage with it?
Well, so my understanding is it wasn't being done quite up to John's standard at the... So go ahead and tell the story, John.
So here's the irony is when I was in the legislature, I was the House sponsor of a bill that dealt with financial transparency. And that was created and that was put over in the Division of Finance.
Yes.
I become state auditor and the system hasn't been updated since then. It was sluggish, slow. And after a few years, they finally decided we'll just have John in the auditor's office just upgrade it, take care of it, and we just expanded from that. But transparency was a big thing for me when I was in the legislature.
Yeah. So that's where we report where all of those tax dollars are. So our goal is to make sure that the taxpayer knows what we do. And that's where every tax dollar is spent. So transparent.utah.gov, you're welcome to follow along at home. But we have done our best to curate that information in a way that's usable for the public so that you can truly understand what's going on. So John made me promise when I ran for office that I would double down and keep transparency there. And that's what we've done. We've expanded it. We've got lots of different ways to track the money and different reports that we have done so that the taxpayer will know not only where the federal funding goes and the state funding goes, but you can also track local governments and what their budgets have done over time and who their largest paid vendors are, who their highest paid employees are. with all of that information that's out there, still to this day, the most searched item on Transparent Utah, Kyle Whittingham's salary.
Maybe that will stop soon, but...
Well, it's not until after they post what his settlement was.
So this is really interesting to me because I'm listeners know I'm often at odds with the politics of our state, but I really do appreciate and think that we have some really strong elements when it comes to the way that that our government, your office, mm-hmm. the governor's office, honestly, tries to communicate yeah. priorities through budget, through creating accessible documents. And I really think this is important because I know it's difficult to ask people to kind of take that next step to engage with how their tax dollars are spent. Right. But I really think it's important when we want to hold our local governments mm-hmm. accountable, when we want to understand what this investment really means, where it's going, when you really want to get involved, it is important to understand these fine-grained details. And it doesn't have to be that fine. Really, yeah. it gives you the ability to understand the overview of how our state is using your money.
Yes,
and that's important.
Exactly. And so as an accountant, I looked at it and said, after 28 years in the private sector, if I was going to evaluate how a company was doing and to really be able to tell what's going on, I would want to see a trend line over time. And then I would want to be able to compare that trend line to other like entities. And that's what we've done at Transparent Utah. John started that with education so that on Transparent Utah, you can tell down to the school how much it costs to educate every child in Utah, and then you can compare peer schools to each other. How do those numbers line up? And then
this was people said this is impossible. I mean, you might do it for a school,
hard.
But to do it statewide, impossible. Yeah. You can't do it. So
we do
want to do it.
Yeah. And now it's down to a science. So curating that data, now we're going to do it. The latest one is the entities on counties and cities where, and so now on Transparent Utah, you'll find an entity dashboard, the drop down under governments. And we're going to do the very same thing with counties and cities. So you'll be able to compare what their budgets and expenditures have been over time, their revenues and expenditures, and then also what that looks like compared to others. Because coming into the legislative session last year, one of the most common question I got was, how come school districts are collecting all of this cash? Their cash balances have increased so far. And that was my response. Well, you really should know, what is that trend? Is this out of line for where the trend has been? And then how does that one school you're concerned about compare to the other schools in their peer category? So Marlo Oaks is the treasurer. We were tasked with that last year. And our latest report was the cash and cash assets. Because what happens if you tell an entity or a government, we're going to be checking what you've got in the PTIF, they'll just pull their money out of the PTIF, the investment account that Marlo manages, and put it into a different account. So my response was, you need to be checking all of the cash balances and then compare it. So we did that comparison, and much to the chagrin of the legislators who asked us to do it, it showed that the state of Utah was actually three times farther ahead in their accumulation of cash than the school districts and the counties and cities. So sometimes those types of numbers are very enlightening to people who are making those decisions over, is this really out of line for what we're seeing with governments? Or should everybody be getting a refund from every government agency?
Okay. Yeah.
And one of the key things on transparency isn't just looking at the finances, but it's to see how that money was used.
Sure.
Where did it go? What did you get for it?
Yeah.
And it's marrying that performance or activity with the dollars.
Now, here's a question I'm a little embarrassed I don't know the answer to, but as a resident of Salt Lake City, and I know there's been a lot of, or are we going to call it negotiation, collective mm-hmm. decision-making, forced decisions on the city about, I often am worried that we've given a big chunk of downtown to a billionaire. Is that kind of information available on transparency? Can I see where my tax dollars are going when we're looking at things like what might be happening with baseball or around the Delta Center?
So those public infrastructure districts and those special districts, we like to call them super public infrastructure districts in our office. Because there are now six, and I did see the legislature passed another one that was statewide yesterday, which will get us up to seven. Those are becoming a more common way that the state is doing things, which it really makes our financial statements for the state of Utah very complex. Tracking those is a little different. Getting their information from them is becoming more and more difficult for my office. puts us in conflict with some very powerful movers and shakers across the state, as we require them to give us that information so that, yes, it is taxpayer money. We should be able to see exactly where it went, how it was spent, how it was used, why it was necessary in the first place. So, yep, be patient. Okay. Follow along at home. Transparent Utah, more to come.
Great.
Because, yeah, we think about it all the time over how do we show this so people actually understand exactly what it's doing. And then bringing those revenues back into what the state's revenues are that are really showing that trend of how the state's revenues, when you bring in all of those component units, how that trend line is really going very high across the state for the additional expenditures and revenue.
Yeah.
So I want to pivot off to a different thing. Earlier, you mentioned audits. This is a word that people know the word, but they don't necessarily know what it means to do an audit. What is the purpose of an audit?
Well, the main purpose is for you to be able to search out.
I'm pretending
out,
that I don't
yes,
know.
Yes. We search out and find where things are not going the way they should. Our whole job is to find waste, fraud, and abuse. And then we give recommendations are the most important part of the audit. An independent auditor will give you a recommendation over how to fix the problem. Because we're independent, that means we are not management. We cannot go in and fix it for you. So we have to come back the next year or the next time around and see, did you implement those recommendations? And it's always a little disturbing to me when I get we don't agree and we're not going to do it, and the recurring finding year after year after year when we publish a problem. So that's the basic thing we do, is we are looking for the problems and giving recommendations for how to fix it so that government can be more effective and more efficient with the money it has.
Talk about how that impacts trust.
Well, it should bring more trust. You have to be an independent auditor. That means we're not in the agencies. We do not answer to the legislature. We do not answer to the governor. We are an independent only to the people of Utah who elected us over how things are going. And that should build trust. That is how you provide the assurance or the trust that government is working well, when the auditor is allowed to go in and look freely to see all the information and to provide that certification, if for lack of a better word, that yes, we approve, it's going the way it should be going, or we've seen these problems, this is what we would recommend you fix.
So about how many people are in the auditor's office, and can you tell me some of the major areas of work?
So we are at about 53 right now between financial audit, which is the largest section. Our second section is data analytics. That's fun. We should hit that one later because there is an unfunded federal mandate for the end of the year that John got us a really good start on. That's our second largest section for now. And then we also have local government oversight. So all of the collection of local governments, budgets, financial statements, all of that, we have that oversight. We have our whistleblower hotline is through the auditor's office. So we have 3 staff in that, which is not enough. We've doubled the complaints that have been coming in over the past year. So we get a lot of complaints through the whistleblower hotline. And then we also have privacy. We do privacy audits over data security and the information. The largest holder of public information is state and local governments. Yeah. Making sure that that information is secure is an audit that the state auditor also does.
Yeah. So we just have a couple minutes left. Is there anything you'd love to touch on so that people know about your office or about how to engage the whistleblowers? Super important. Transparency.utah.gov is very important. Anything else you would leave our listeners with?
Yeah. So we open transparent.utah.gov, the office. If anyone has a question on how to use the dashboards or how to better use the dashboards, we'll even make you a super user. We give you access to all of the underlying data, and you can curate it for any project you're working at, for school or holding government officials accountable.
Which means you can come in the back door, not the website,
mass analyze the data. So we make it available in any format you would like. Follow along at home or come in, call us. We'll help you work through that data. And then, yes, if you have concerns about state, local governments, the hotline is always there for whistleblower protection, but that is truly an anonymous way to report on concerns that an individual would have.
Wonderful.
And I like to say, at the end of the day, when you think of auditor, it's a watchdog.
Yes.
It's a constitutional watchdog on behalf of the taxpayers.
Yeah. And I'll just say from my perspective, I think we've had, John, you were certainly very qualified, but your background that you bring, the professional experience that you bring, really says to me that you are a person who takes this role very seriously, that you have the skills and qualifications to really do this job well. And I think that's really important for the state of Utah. I hope that we would look more deeply at our candidates to ensure that they really have the background to adequately and appropriately serve in the roles we elect them to. So thanks for your service. I'm sure it's a huge headache.
Otter Cannon, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was fun.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for listening in to this very special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle. We will be back next week with a roundup of what happened at the legislature.
This is John Dougal and Shereen Gurbani.
Our show is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.